Welcome back to the Bob Davis Podcasts. This is going to be podcast 405, and I thought I would do another walk and talk because we're going to have so few of these really fantastic nights to be able to do this. And there will be probably a little wind. Earlier it was really not windy at all, and I came out here, and now, of course, the wind has picked up a little bit in the late wee hours of Tuesday morning. And I want to talk a little bit about the China thing and the markets and just black swan events. So we'll talk about those in podcast 405. Well, as I get ready to do my walk, you know, the trees are still green out here. It's still beautiful and it's cool. So it feels like fall. And of course, the leaves will be changing. And with the change in the weather and things like the State Fair coming and Sturgis and Wee Fest, it lets us know that the close of summer is coming fast and that we're about to enter the mini ice age that we call winter in the upper Midwest. And it's a good time to have Ryan Plumbing and Heating check your heating systems. And here's why. Today, with heat and air conditioning and systems like that, it's all about integrating smart tech with your heating systems to make them more efficient. And if you haven't done this, if you haven't updated your heating system in the last 5 years, Ryan can upgrade you and you will save a lot of money during the mini ice age we call winter in the upper Midwest. So here's what you do. Call Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul, 651-224-4771, in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. They go metro-wide, which means they go to Invergrove and they go to Plymouth and they go to Maple Grove. You'll see their trucks all over town. For four generations, quality replacement and repair of all plumbing, heating, and air conditioning systems, residential and business. Ryan Plumbing and Heating on University Avenue in St. Paul. Have them check your heating system because even if they don't upgrade, they may also be able to help you to make it more efficient. 651-224-4771 in St. Paul. In Minneapolis, I'm going to give you the number real quick. You ready? 612-927-6488. Metro-wide from St. Paul for over 60 years. Ryan Plumbing and Heating. And thanks, Greg, for sponsoring the Bob Davis Podcast. So I'm doing this podcast on Monday night, Tuesday morning, and this is kind of a special podcast because I've decided to talk about a breaking story, and this is the fall or the crash of the Chinese markets and the effect on the knock-on effects on the United States and other world markets today, Monday. August, what is it, 24th or something, 2015, and then last week. And it's funny because the beginning of the first Jason Lewis podcast that I did on Friday started out with us talking about U.S. markets, and we covered so much ground so quickly that we really didn't concentrate on the causes and what's going on. So I want to kind of do that a little bit in this podcast. And I'm going to tell you at the outset, it's hard because I didn't sit down and just write this out. Somebody commented the other day, you know, sometimes I feel as I'm being lectured to when you're reading. And I got to tell you, you know, I do lots of different podcasts. I do walk and talk podcasts. I do podcasts where I don't write anything down like this one. And I just, you know, try to give you what I'm thinking about. But sometimes you have to go through and you have to actually organize your thoughts and you have to read and you have to try to have some semblance of order to what you're talking about. You can't just blurt stuff out. That's one of the big problems in our media today is people just blurt stuff out and they don't think about it. And it's all done for reaction. And one of the great things about podcasting is that you can do all kinds of different things, but you don't have to do that anymore. It's not necessary. You know, I can put up a podcast about pre-fascism or black swan events and really go through and think about stuff and make notes and have some sort of semblance of organization of thought, put it up there, and then it's up there. And what I do try to do is vary it. And the cool thing about podcasting also is that you would never even be able to talk about stuff like that on talk radio because you'd have to break or someone would be shaking their head behind the glass and worrying about whether or not it was interesting enough, and then you would start to get calls from people who know less than you know, which is not as much as someone else knows, and it devolves into, you know, people just saying silly things and going to the next caller, where you're servicing the callers and talking about something because the callers are driving the content instead of the person that's actually doing the show saying, this is what I want to talk about. So that's one of the reasons I like podcasting. And the reason I refer to that is I did a podcast a while back where I actually really sat down and thought about it and talked about something called Black Swan events. And Black Swan events are events that are historic, pivotal events that appear out of nowhere, but then later people look at them and say, we should have known that that was going to happen because all the signs pointed to it. That's a Black Swan event. And if you're in the know and if you're watching news, if you're paying attention to what's going on, then you're probably not surprised by the collapse of the markets in China in the present time frame. That doesn't mean that they won't reinflate next week, but or this week, later this week, but for the time being, we're seeing a reduction in the Chinese markets, and it's roiling U.S. markets, and it is causing all sorts of angst in the world markets. And I thought, well, you know, is this the Black Swan event? And I want to say a couple things about the China thing, because I'm not seeing the kind of coverage which gives people perspective. It didn't take long at all for two camps to develop, one that says it's nothing to worry about, and the other one that says it's going to be the end of the world, neither of which are true. And that seems to be kind of the storyline that's being pushed, that immediately what happens is the punditry goes out, and they start pushing a point of view rather than talking about a story and the different components of a story. They start saying, I'm going to push this point of view because apparently that's what I'm supposed to do. And I'm convinced that it has to do with the way the media does things, that they don't really want to put any effort or work behind anything. They just want people to come on and say stuff and then show some B-roll of Chinese counting their money and move on, and or people in the markets, and it gives you the impression that there's actually some journalism going on covering this, but really, there isn't. There's just a bunch of people talking about it, which is what you'll do if you decide to talk about it around the water cooler. It's not going to give you any background. And it's one of the things that I object the most to when it comes to media, because immediately we have, you know, two debating sides over something that really doesn't need to be debated. I mentioned that I thought, and I did this in the Black Swan podcast, and I've said it more than once, I'm not satisfied with the political process right now. I'm not satisfied with political coverage at all right now. I think we're at the end of an era. I've been saying this for a while, and I don't know when the era changes. I know that eras don't follow decadal segments. So someone doesn't have a switch somewhere that starts the new era at the day that January 1st, 1990, or, you know, January 1st, 2000. Things have a way of developing, and you look back on them later and say, wow, that really changed everything. And I mean, I think we all know that 9/11 changed everything, and we all know that Kennedy's assassination changed everything. And we all know that the election of Ronald Reagan changed things, but we didn't know it at the time. And I just wanted to say, and I was thinking about this earlier, that if we were able to go back in time to 1983 or 1980 or 1981 or 1979 or 1966, I mean, many people that listen to this podcast were alive during all those years, and we all have our memories of those years, some of us. Some don't have any memory of that year, let's say 66 or 78, but they do have memories of 83 and 84. But if you were able to go back in time to any year, pick a year that you were alive, and you'd be surprised at the things that you forgot that happened. You'd be surprised at how people talked about things. You'd be surprised at how different things might be and how much of the difference that you forgot and how much your recollection of those times has changed how that time appeared in your mind. We're coming up on State Fair time in Minnesota, and there is actually a State Fair podcast on this page. If you just go into the search window and type in State Fair, you'll find it. And what's really cool about it is, you'll have to listen to a bunch of crap before it, but it's in there. About 9 or 10 minutes in, I play this little documentary that my friend Ted Goldbuff and Alan Searle and I did at the State Fair in, I think it was like 1984 or something, 83. And, you know, I hadn't listened to it in a long time, and I was just struck by how different people talked. You know, their accents are different. The way that they speak is different. And I thought that was just fascinating. So if you were able to go back in time, literally immerse yourself back in a time and spend a week in 1983 or 1979 or something, I think you'd be shocked at how different this time is. And we really didn't notice it changing, but it's changed and here we are. And I think we're in another one of those periods of change where there's sort of it just feels like we're on unsteady ground. It feels oddly just loose. It doesn't, all this talk, all the things that I see being covered in the news, just, it feels hollow to me, and I don't know why. It just does. And my sense is that somehow, whether it's the way I collect information, or maybe I'm just that way, I think something's coming. I just have a feeling that something is coming, and that's why I did the Black Swan podcast. And so we come to the present time frame, and here we have this market crash in China. So I want to very quickly talk about China and give you some background on China, and on this particular thing. And I want to preface it by saying that I am not a market expert. I haven't been reading a lot of market stuff recently. I've been skimming it and being aware of it, but I haven't read a lot of it because my big issue with the media right now is that, you know, and I'm really not doing a full news cleanse, but I have been avoiding it because there's so much nonsense that it's just not worth even wading through the nonsense to get to the real thing. And the more I look at stuff, the more I find that you have to do that. So I mentioned that what is happening right now is that there's two camps already in the media. One that says this is the end of China. The other one that says this is going to cause all sorts of problems in the United States. And the other one that says, you know, that's one. And then the other one that says, well, don't worry about it. It's going to be fine. So it's just, we're just repricing market interventions, and we're just repricing central banks and, you know, slower economy and the new normal and all that. So it's just one of those things that happened. We knew a correction was coming in the markets, and don't worry about it. And there really, that kind of a dichotomy, that immediate A-B, you adhere to this perspective A or that perspective B, and you have to fight for that point of view whether you know anything about it or not. And I just refuse to play that game. It is interesting to me that the China markets collapsed, because for a long time we have been talking about China cooking the books, and experts have been saying they don't believe that Chinese growth is anywhere near 7%, and people seem surprised when you hear talk about China cooking the books and lying about economic growth and things of that nature. And I just want to say a couple things about China, because I think it's really, really, really important. Because for a long time, it's been China's going to take over the United States. China's going to become the largest, you know, economy in the world. China's going to overtake the U.S. as the chief, you know, arbiter of all that goes on in the world. And we really need to be worried about China and China, China, China. And, you know, I go out and I speak and I hear people talk about China's taking our jobs and China this and China that. And I have always taken the view that that they really don't understand where China has come from, and they don't really understand the extent to which China is a tyranny, and the extent to which, and Jason actually touched on this a little bit in our podcast, the extent to which you cannot have a free market economy, or even a controlled free market economy, which is what we have, without a democratic government. And the problem with China is there is no history of a democratic government that has lasted for any length of time. You have had 5 or 6 big families that have run China even through the communist era. And China, in many ways, is a lawless place that is control. It's all about the Communist Party. And so I don't believe anything that China says. And part of that comes from going there and spending some time there and you know, when you're there and you're reading the newspaper, conversely, you know, I avoid the media here in the United States because it's all nonsense, because you don't get any facts. Over there, you don't get any facts. Like, it's all propaganda. So I doubt that people in China know much at all about what is going on with the market. So it's a tyranny. And as it is a tyranny, I just don't believe that you can have a free market coexist with a government that is tyrannical. And I think that that's the case. Those people have no recourse if things go wrong. And the army that everyone in this country is so frightened of in China really exists to oppress the people. The people's army is there to oppress the people. Why do you think they call it the people's army? It's the people's liberation army, and the job is to make sure that the people don't get liberated. And a great example is occasionally something will happen in China, and you'll hear about riots or you'll hear about things that happen. And the reason is those people have no recourse. They have no recourse to transmit their will through a process of democratic government. And our system is not perfect, but people who are angry can go out and campaign for Donald Trump, you know, or they can go out and campaign for Bernie Sanders. They can slap a Bernie Sanders bumper sticker on their car, or they can be all in for Hillary, or they can campaign for a local congressman. And those guys might not always do what you expect them to do or want them to do, but you do have recourse. You do have the freedom to participate in the political process. And I've talked a lot about that. They don't even have that, such as ours is, and how limiting ours is. They don't even have that. They have no recourse. And I think it was yesterday, there's a metals trader in, I don't know, I guess it was Shanghai, but I could be wrong. But some people from Shanghai and Kunming went to this hotel where this guy was, a large group of quote-unquote investors. And when he was checking out of his hotel, the mob, as it was reported, grabbed him and dragged him to the police station and turned him into the police station. Now, my understanding in China is the police tend to be apolitical in the sense that the idea is that they don't want the police to be viewed as enemies by the people. The police are supposed to be there to quote-unquote help people. And it's the party that goes around and purges, and, you know, people disappear when they... The deal in China is this. It's kind of a quiet, simple thing. You're not allowed to criticize the government. And if you go criticize the government, then they will take you somewhere and you'll sit there until you figure out that you're not supposed to do that. And it's usually a safe house or someplace where you're taken and it's made clear to you, because the idea is if the local party official knows that there's a problem, then he is obligated to report it up the line, so he doesn't want to know about it. I guess that's the best way to explain it. So people are subtly oppressed and overtly oppressed in China, and there is no recourse. They don't have anywhere to go. Well, you know, you can't have that kind of a system and have a free market economy. And what they're trying to do, and I want to make this point too, because I think it's really, really important. What the People's Republican Government of China, or whatever you want to call it, the Communist Party in China, is attempting to engineer an evolution from an export-based industrial economy to a consumer-based economy. That my sense and my understanding is that has happened in the West organically, for lack of a better term. I mean, the United States has sort of made the transition from an industrial economy to a service-based consumer economy, although we still produce an awful lot of agricultural goods and we still produce an awful lot of manufactured goods. It's just not as large a portion of the economy, and it's done with fewer people than we used to do. Our economy is not based on, you know, 70% consumer economy, because the way that that's calculated is they include things like transfer payments in the consumer economy. Actually, the consumer economy in this country is about 43 or 44% or 40%, depending on the calculation, and not 70%. That's another lie that you hear all the time, is that America is a consumer-based economy. It's a service-based, it's an industrial base, it is a consumer-based economy, but it's an advanced Western economy. China, on the other hand, is trying to engineer that kind of an economy without the democratic component. So that to me is the problem in China. It's not good because if the deal with the Chinese government post Tiananmen was, you know, you may not be free, but we'll ensure that you're prosperous or comfortable. And so in order to do that, we will engineer 6 to 7% economic growth. And the rule of thumb has been, if China drops below 6% economic growth, that there will be domestic problems. And now some people believe that they're either in recession, which is negative growth, or somewhere around 2%, which for that economy, it's significant. And the way that they've engineered the 6 and 7% growth, and some people might correct me if I'm wrong, but I think I'm pretty correct about this, is that the government, the central bank of China, has invested or injected, depending on how you look at things, a vast amount of cash into the system to encourage real estate investment and building. And so the money goes from the government directly to these companies who are owned by the army and by government interests to build vast cities and plants and everything else as investment, and then the money somehow circulates through the economy that way. So it's really not what we have here, even with quantitative easing and even with the Federal Reserve and everything else. Our system, while it's not perfect, is a little bit more responsive to the people. And it's also, it's a controlled market economy in the sense that we do have systems that recognize that the economy is a force of nature. It isn't a machine that you pull levers and switches and things of that nature, and A equals, this much input over here equals this much output over here. Sometimes it doesn't quite work that way because the economy is a force of nature. Now, this is my biggest disagreement with a lot of people in this country that believe government intervention solves every kind of problem, because I think economy, and I've talked about this in my travels and everything else, I think a lot of what happens on Wall Street, I think a lot of what happens in the markets, I think a lot of what happens with the Federal Reserve doesn't necessarily make it all the way out to Oklahoma and people in Minnesota and Wisconsin and Southern Illinois, and people, are resourceful and they do their thing. They do what people do. And that's what I'm talking about when I talk about economy being a force of nature. But what we do in this country in terms of government intervention pales in contrast to what they do in China in terms of government intervention. And we're having this conversation, or we will have this conversation in 2016, in the presidential election and in the congressional elections and in the Senate elections and in local elections, we'll be having this conversation. And if the American people decide that they want more government intervention, then we shall have it, right? Or less government intervention, or if we want some sort of, demagogue who has rhetorical solutions to everything, we will get that. That's not how it works in China, and I think that's really important to point out. Now, if the Chinese government cannot right the ship, so to speak, in the next few weeks, and those markets continue to devolve and the economic situation there continues to devolve, it could have an effect on the world economy, especially if banks are invested in wacky Chinese securities based on air, similar to what happened to us in 2008, and also based on the companies that will be losers in that transaction if the economy in China doesn't continue to grow at 7 or 8%, whatever they may be. Real estate investors, companies that are building there, and the other thing would be companies that are selling things to Chinese. If the markets slow down and people start hoarding their cash, then, the iPhone sales might dry up. If the Chinese government keeps devaluing the yuan and, they start to see massive inflation there, that could also have an effect on U.S. companies that are operating there. And the first companies that come to mind in terms of consumer sales to China would be General Motors, which sells the Buick over there, and they love the Buick in China. And of course, Apple, which sells the iPhone, but there are many others. On the other hand, companies that are manufacturing in China, as I said earlier, may actually find that manufacturing stuff in China is cheaper, which may actually help them. I think the real issue is banks, U.S. banks and other, European banks, U.S. banks and other Asian banks that are invested in wacky Chinese securities might see negative knock-on effects. Where it really gets interesting is if the people of China feel that that pact has been broken, that they said, you can't have freedom, but we'll make you comfortable. If they start to freak out because of the economic situation, they have no recourse. And you could see a situation where the industrial centers of China, the southern provinces, Shanghai, Hong Kong, which is not really a province, but you know what I'm saying, Hong Kong being really separate from China in the sense that Hong Kong developed separately and they really do understand markets and free markets, especially there. You might see portions of the country start to demand more autonomy over their financial affairs, and that might create a lot of friction. You might see a wholesale breakup of the regions of China, and obviously the academics would say, oh, people have been predicting that for 50 years and it hasn't happened. Well, that doesn't mean it can't happen. And it doesn't mean that people, if they lose faith in the central bank, they may lose faith in the government. And you see, there's no option there because there isn't, they can't have an election. They can't reelect somebody they can't impeach somebody. They can't have another election and a new regime come into power. It will be a blunt force situation where the government will have to use the army to suppress this movement toward, figuring out another solution to the country's financial problems. That will have huge reverberations worldwide, okay? And that, thus, it could be a black swan event in that we would look back and say everything was different after that event because those things would have wide-ranging repercussions for all of us. I don't know. I mean, I'm hearing this a lot today that, China and the U.S., the economies are intertwined, they're too close, and if they go down, we're going to go down. If China catches a cold, we're going to get the flu. I don't know if I believe that. U.S. has trading partners in Europe. We have trading partners. I mean, Canada, I think, is our largest trading partner because of agriculture and oil. We're now the largest swing oil producer in the world. We trade with Latin America. We trade with Europe. We trade with, all other parts of Asia, Japan, the Korea, South Korea and everything else. I don't know that I would say that, a depression in China would throw the United States into a tailspin. If anything, we have an economy that has, as I mentioned this many, many times, has very slow growth and is therefore susceptible to shocks because we don't have dynamic growth. And we can't base our dynamic growth on exclusively trading with China or with producing goods cheaply in China. We have to begin to figure out ways to allow that natural force, that storm called the economy, that human, situation to grow on its own without intervention. And I think there's been too much intervention, whether it's quantitative easing or the stimulus. There has been too much mismanagement of government finances with debt and other things. And I think we've had a very tough time in the last 10 years. We've had a tough time for 6 or 7 years, to say the least. And it's only gotten a little bit better in the last couple of years, 3 years or so. And I just think the economy is growing too slowly, 2%, 2.5%, or 1%, depending on the quarter, that a shock can be dangerous. So I'm not sure that we have fixed the problems that created what happened in 2008. I'm not sure that anybody even agrees on the causes of what happened in 2008. But we're not exactly doing what we need to do for our economy. So we can be susceptible to shocks that we shouldn't be because of the situation with our economy. And I again... with all the focus on China, it kind of takes the focus off the problems with the U.S. economy. Suffice it to say that our economic situation isn't exactly real healthy either. It's healthier than it was for various reasons. I think most of it's just the nature of the country. I see people being resourceful. I see people starting businesses, even though it's hard. I'm one of them, and we keep doing it. And I see people buying houses, even though it's hard. I see people piecing together part-time jobs, things of that nature. So I think people are being resourceful, but I don't feel that we have dynamic economic growth. And I've been saying this. And you hear people, some Republican candidates are going out and saying things like, well, we need to have 4% economic growth. We need a lot more than 4% economic growth. We need dynamic, and I mean 6%+ economic growth for a number of quarters to get this country moving forward. And I don't think we're going to have that until whatever pivot point in history needs to be reached and we go through this keyhole that we have to go through. And I don't know when it's going to happen, but I think we're going to go through it. And I don't know that this China thing is the cause of it. It could be the trigger. It could be the thing. It could not be the thing. But I thought I would do a quick podcast about my immediate observations about it. I would caution people from just making vast assumptions based on a couple of things that they heard about what's going to happen with China. This thing could be contained and over with within 3 or 4 days, and you might see the markets start to improve. And then does that mean that the problem went away? No, it just means they put a Band-Aid on it, and it's off the books for now, you know? But it will make a lot of people look silly who have predicted this horrible thing from that's going supposedly to happen. You know, I can't predict the future. I refuse to do that. I hate it when these guys do that, because it sets people up to believe things that may or may not be true. The truth is, they don't know what's going on in China. Nobody knows what's going on in China. Nobody knows what's going on at the highest levels of the government in China, what they're doing or not doing. They know what's going on, or maybe they don't. You know, they may not even know what the situation is economically in their country. We certainly don't know. So going around and saying things like this is what we know to be true is nonsense. You know, we don't know what's going on there, and we don't know whether this could turn into a spectacular, just a spectacular event like the fall of the Berlin Wall, where you just sit back and go, wow. Or whether this is going to just be another thing that we talk about for 3 or 4 days and then it goes away and we start talking about Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton's email again, you know? So we'll just have to wait and see. But I thought I would do a quick podcast on it because I feel like somebody should say, hey, wait a minute, let's not have a complete freak out about something yet. So I would caution everyone that, you know, you're going to hear a lot of stuff about this in the next few days. Most of it's going to be wrong. If it devolves into a real serious economic problem, you're going to hear even more stuff. It will become the story 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And there will be so much information and so many interviews and so many people fulminating and so much to contribute to your freak out. And most of it will be wrong in the initial flush of the thing. You just have to be personally ready to weather these kinds of crises, because I just get the sense that these kinds of problems, often occur, and the people in charge just really have no idea what to do. And it fuels the conspiracy theories that it's all being engineered for whatever reason. And if you think that, then great. I have no idea, and I couldn't prove that even if I did think it. So, you know, I don't engage in that kind of nonsense, because you can't prove it anyway, and you'll drive yourself crazy. You'll end up, you know, in a moth-eaten t-shirt in a hole somewhere, mumbling to yourself, which, by the way, is what I'm doing. so it's a good idea not to engage in that. But if you do, fine, you know. And I just think we should wait and see, you know, where this goes. So that is the situation on Monday night, Tuesday morning. So, thanks for listening to this walk and talk, my first impressions of what happened today with China and what may happen or may not happen with China in podcast 405. Hope that it gave you some stuff to think about. Sponsored by Ryan Plumbing and Heating. Don't forget, it's going to get cold, and when it does, you're going to turn your heat on, and you want to make sure it works, first of all. And second thing is, if you get Ryan Plumbing to come out and check it, you might be able to see that there's ways to upgrade it and include smart tech in it, and that will save you a lot of money in the mini ice age that's coming that we call winter in the upper Midwest. 651-224-4771 in St. Paul, in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488, metro wide from St. Paul. That means the suburbs too. Ryan Plumbing and Heating, and thanks, Greg, for sponsoring the podcasts. And also want to thank the digital sponsor of the Bob Davis Podcasts.com, Alpha Systems. If you're a pilot and you want to be safe on takeoffs and landings, and when you fly, Alpha Systems makes the revolutionary angle of attack indicator. Bottom line on this is Alpha Systems AOA saves lives. It is FAA approved. Click on the Alpha Systems banners for more information about Alpha's revolutionary angle of attack indicator at thebobdavispodcast.com. And thanks, Alpha, for sponsoring the digital side of the Bob Davis Podcast. Thanks to you guys for listening on Stitcher.com, iTunes, or TuneIn, and occasionally blogtalkradio.com. Thanks for liking and sharing and favoriting and following on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. And thanks for your donations as well at thebobdavispodcast.com. You can do so safely and securely through PayPal. It's right under the picture of the Mobile Podcast Command Center. You click on the big yellow donate button, and it takes you right to PayPal. And you can donate a dollar or whatever you want, and appreciate everybody donating. That money goes right into the fund to operate that vehicle. So it's not used for anything else except diesel fuel and Komodo Dragon coffee and maybe new hubcaps. So, or shock absorbers or something. But that's what that fund is for, and I appreciate the donations. Thank you for listening to Podcast 405. I think I'm going to go in and make some more coffee, and I've been watching Hell on Wheels on Netflix. I'm going to watch some more Hell on Wheels and think of capitalism unbound. Bye-bye.